Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here today. I see so many friendly and familiar and unfamiliar faces. And Violet Force, or Lavender Menace, here I am. And it's also, I think, a very appropriate way to celebrate the centenary of Emily Dickinson, who would really have appreciated a gathering like this. Ellen Moore has said, writing of Dickinson, that the real hidden scandal in Emily Dickinson's life was not the romance upon which biographers try vainly to speculate, but her embarrassing ignorance of mainstream American literature time, instead of which she read and reread every Anglo-American woman writer of her time: Helen Hunt Jackson, Lydia Maria Child, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Lady Georgina Fullerton, Diana Maria Craik, Elizabeth Stuart Phelps, Rebecca Harding Davis, Francesca Alexander, Matilda McCarnes, and of course everything that George Eliot and Mrs. Browning and every single one of the Bronte sisters wrote. Mrs. Hunt's poems, Dickinson wrote in an astonishing letter of 1871, are stronger than any written by women since Mrs. Browning, with the exception of Mrs. Lewes. Who but Emily Dickinson cared so much for rating women poets, or cared to read anything by Helen Hunt Jackson other than Ramona, or cared for George Eliot's poetry, or took care to call her Miss Lewes, as she would have preferred. Emily Dickinson knew, we now know, every stanza of Elizabeth Barrett's novel Aurora Leigh by heart, and many of Dickinson's most mysterious or enigmatic poems have proved to be arias on passages from Aurora Leigh. She wrote to the Norcross sisters in 1861 that Mrs. Browning fainted, we need not read Aurora Leigh to know, and George Sand says, make no noise in her grandmother's bedroom. Poor children, women now, queens now, and one in the Eden of God. I guess they both forget that now, so who knows, but we, stars from the same night, stop twinkling last. Take heart, sister, twilight is but the short bridge, and the moon stands at the end. If we can only get to her, yet if she sees us fainting, she will put out her yellow hands. When did the war really begin? So that was Emily Dickinson talking about her sister poets, and here we all are together today in her honor and in each other's honor, and it is, as I said, a great pleasure. I'm going to start with a longish poem which is written for another wonderful poet and friend, Marie Pissot, who's here in the audience today. It's a crown of sonnets called La Fontaine de Vaucluse, and is indeed a poem for and about women poets. It has an epigraph from Richard Howard's poem Audience, which is, why write unless you praise sacred places? The Fontaine de Vaucluse is, of course, where Petrarch wrote all those sonnets. There's a reference in the first poem to a line from H.D.'s, in fact it's from Tribute to Freud. She's talking about the voyage which she made to Karnak with her friend Breyer in 1920. Always two ladies alone, as they were called. We were not alone. Azure striation swirls beyond stone, flung in by French papas and German boys. The radio guide emits trilingual noise. Always two ladies alone, we were not. Source, cunt, umbilicus, resilient bloom springs where the sheer gorge spreads wooded moss thighs. Unsounded female depth in a child-sized pool, boys throw rocks. Hobbled in platform shoes, girls stare at the edge. We came for the day on hot bus from Avignon. A Swedish child hurls a sharp boulder. Tall girl, his sister, 12, tan, crouches to finger shell wall, bedded in rock. We find our way here when take away what we need. Here, when we can, we take away what we need. Stones, jars of herb leaves, scrap patch work bag stored in the haphazard rooms can afford. Marie and I are lucky we can feed our children, ourselves, what we earn. One left the man who beat her, left hostage of two daughters. One weighs life to her wages, finds both wanting, bought out, stays put, scornful of self, not deserving more. The concierge at Le Régent is 46, there 15 years, widowed one, behind counters, a dun, perpetual presence, fixed in sallow, non-age, till Marie talked to her. I learn she is coeval with friends, the novelist of 70 who gives us tea and cakes, the sister with whom she lives a dialogue, the old Hungarian Countess Potter, daughter, British dyke, bravely espoused in a medieval hill town, Provence, Jane, whom I probably will never know and would probably never. Lillian the weaver, Lillian's daughter, the weaver, Lillian's housewifely other daughter, mothering, the great-grandmother who drove us through Gnarled Lane, Avignon, the virgin source, wedgies on. I've ugly to know, I brought her. Iva will want to know what I brought her. From Selfridge's, a double-deck bus, taxi, Lego, a dark blue flowered dress from Unifree, a wickerwork doll's chair from the Vance Market, books, a rat yarn deer, a batik girl guitarist who composes Sea Creek, one of three I chose, two pupils, one by the woman taught, might plunge her arms to the elbows, might shy stone, might stay shy. I'll see her in days. Sometimes she still swims at center. Sometimes she is a four-year-old, an ocean wave, and I am on vertiginous rain, where I am nobody's mother and nobody's daughter. Where I am nobody's mother and nobody's daughter to find me, words of a woman in pain, self-blame, obsessed with an absent or present man, blindfold, crossing two swords, her back, water. The truth is I still wake up with lust and loss and only half believe me better. The truth is that I still write 12-page letters and blame my acne and my flabby ass that I am 35 and celibate. Women are lustful and fickle and all alike, say the hand-laid, flower-pressed sheets, paper mill. I pay attention to what lies they tell us here, but at the flowered lip, hesitate, one of the tamed girls stopped the edge and look. One of the tamed girls stopped at the edge to look at herself in water, genital self that stains and stinks, that is synonymous with drains, wounds, pettiness, pity, buke. The pool creates itself, cleanse, puissant, deeper magma, maker, genetrix. Marie and I, each with a notebook on knee, begin to write, homage sources up, force you find here. There is another source consecrate in the pool we perch above, our own intelligent accord that brings out a lucid power of spring to work at reinventing work and love. We may be learning how to truth. We may be learning how to tell the truth, distracted by a cinematic sky, Paris below two dozen shades gray, in borrowed rooms, couldn't have. We both worked words so we could tell ourselves all. I get up at 8, go down to buy fresh croissants, put a saucepan on and brew first shared coffee. The water solves itself, salves us. Sideways, hugging the bank, two stocky women helped each other, drank from leathery cup palms. We make our own descent downstream, getting our shoes wet, carefully hoist cold hands from a crevice where azure striations swirl beyond the stones. This is a... This is a pantoum, a poem which was meant to be memorized, a Malaysian form written in quatrains in which the second and fourth line of each stanza are repeated, the first and third and one following until it ends up with its tail in its mouth like the worm Aruberus. And this one I wrote for my daughter, Iva. She was younger, called Iva Pantoum. We pace each other for a long time. I packed my anger with the beast. You are the baby in the mountain. I am in a cold stream. I led you. I packed my anger with beef. You are the woman sticking tongue at cold stream. I led you. You are the woman spring water. You are the woman sticking her tongue out. I am the woman who matches sound. You are the woman with spring calm. I am the woman who obeys. You are the woman who matches sound. You are the woman who makes up words. You are the woman who copies cup calm with this way. I am the woman who makes words. You are the woman who shapes a drinking bowl with this clay. I am the woman with rocks in her pockets. I am the woman who shapes. I was a baby who knew names. You are the child, rocks, pockets. You are the girl in a plaid dress. You are the woman who knows names. You are the baby, fly. You are the girl in a plaid dress, upside down on a monkey bar. You are the baby who could fly over the moon, swinging perch, upside down a monkey bar. You are the baby who eats meat. Over the moon, swinging perch, feathery gulp calls her sister. You are the baby who eats meat, bitch, wolf, hunts shoes. The feathery goblin calls her sister. You are braver than mother. The bitch wolf hunts and chews for you. What are you whining about now? You are braver than mother, and I am not a timid woman. What are you whining about now? My palms itch flick anger, and I'm not a timid woman. You are the woman I can mention. Palms itch flick anger. You are the heiress scraped knees. You are the woman I mention, woman. You are the heiress scraped knees. Scrub them in mountain water. To a woman, I want to love women, turn into scrub them out water, stroke their astonishing faces. Women turn into the scare mask, bad mother, stroked in faces, silver scratch, snake mirror. The scare mask of bad mother, crumbled, chunk, pinch, clay, sinks, silver mirror. You are the little robber girl who crumbles the clay chunks, pinches her friend, gives her a sharp knife. You are the robber girl who was any witch's youngest daughter. Our friend gives you a sharp knife, shows how the noose laid open. Was any witch's youngest daughter golden and bold of you? You run and show how the useful blades open. You are the baby on mountain. I am golden and bold as you run and pace a long time. The little robber girl who's in that poem got into a whole series of poems based on Hans Christian Andersen's story, The Snow Queen, which forms a whole set of assumptions. As most of you may remember, it basically, when I think of why I loved it, when I was a child, a girl's quest, how young Gerda goes in search of her playmate Kay, who's been kidnapped by the Snow Queen, all kinds of adventures on her way, mostly with an assortment of female characters, a witch, princess, a robber woman, chieftain of her band, and the robber woman's daughter who saves Gerda's life by saying, no, no, you shan't kill her, she'll be my pet and sleep with me in bed, and if I get angry, we'll kill her. So, this is, I'll read a couple of poems sequence. This is the robber chieftain, the robber woman speaking, the mother of this fierce child. It has an epigraph from the story. Listen, said the robber girl to Gerda, you see that all the robbers are gone, only my mother is left. She will soon sleep, then I shall do something. And it's the mother, the robber woman speaking. I cuffed you into shape. I molded you swelling matrix, pushed you out into the world. I push you into the world daily, the labor same, vary my pain, unless I work at it. As long as I sleep or feed, you are safe to air. You kicked me from the inside long enough when I bulged you. I put my elbows on what must have been your pointed butt and watched your bony angles fly. I picked my load up, caught breath. As long as I sleep or feed, you are safe in the upper air. I hug you, slap you. I kiss you and I curse you. I get your booted foot on my scarred shins. I can still throw you down and pick you up. Most of it's play. You knocked my knife breath out. As long as I sleep or feed, you are safe. You cheered. Your head reached a belt buckle. Now I can't peer into your matted hair. You lean against. I can rest my chin on head, smelling unwashed child, while you play punch breast the way you always did. As long as I sleep or feed, you are safe in the brain. I always feel you in the hands, clay. You are oven ready now. When you are baked in the kiln of the world, my hands could break what made accidentally, as easily as anybody. As long as I sleep or feed, you are safe in the upper air. You've started. I've scrubbed away your first blood. My breasts are hard when we nurse and do. You chose your friend. You took her for yourself up into that cat hideout where you sleep. I hardly wonder talk of. You were safe in the upper air to believe. Child, leave. No blow that you receive will ever leave a scar that the impatient, careless clout mother gives. Certain that if you live another 100 years, you never would forgive a grain of malice. No harm sends the stairs unless your mother leaves the bedroom door ajar. The heavy step that weaves its twist of fear and reveries of the power of love is, doubt it, hers. The clean wind sweeps eaves, you stretch what you dare. No one will know what you are as long as I sleep among the seas. One of the most mysterious, wonderful characters story, I always, the Snow Queen story, that is a Finland woman who lives at the very border of the South Pole, where the Snow Queen Red Citadel is found. And she's the last person Gerda finds on journey. She's Gerda's riding the reindeer given to her by robber girl, carrying a message to Finland woman's friend Lapland, who's written on a piece of dried cod, which Finland leaves and cooks dried cod, because she wastes anything. The reindeer whispers to Finland woman, who is something witch, something of a shame, something of a wise person, or who really never know. You were so wise, the red, you could bind the winds of the world in a strand. Why don't you use your magic? Help her. Says, well, she's come so far on her own. She can help herself. And this poem is called The Rune of Finland, and it's for a friend of mine who lives almost at Borders Pole, at least the other side of the world, in Budapest, Sharkari, the city of Finland. She could bind the world's winds in a single strand. She could find the world word, the singing wind. She could lend a weird will's mottled hand. She could wind a will word. She could wend the wild woods on a saddled hind. She could sound a Welsh, the rowan one. She could bind the wolf's wounds at waddling. She could bind a banned book, the silk skin. She could spend a world war on invented land. She could pound the dry roots to a kind of bread. She could feed a road gang on invented food. She could find the spare parts severed dead. She could find the stone winds, the waste sand. She could stand the pick hold with a withered lung. She could handle bad puns, the slang. She could dandle foundry, the tongue. She could plait a child's hair with a fishbone comb. She could tend a coal fire in the Arctic wind. She could mend an engine sewing. She could warm the dark feet of a man. She could drink the stone soup from a doubtful well. She could breathe the green stink of a trench drain. She could drink a Queen's Support wine. She could think a few things. She could learn the hand code of the deaf and blind. She could earn the iron keys of Rose Queen. She could wander uphill, drunken friend. She could bind world winds in a single strand. I'm going to read a few poems. The new book is coming out October. It's essentially a novel, sonnet times. Well, not that long has written one of those. It's called Love, Death, the Changing Seasons. It's about, as if anything but that, one of the above all. Only this first one has title, which is La Louvre's name of a restaurant in France. Two long-haired women in the restaurant caress each other's forearm. I avert my eyes. I'm glad to see them there, hurt, looking on, lonely, when I so much want to touch your hand like that. In front of two mémés enjoying their dessert, a British couple with two kids alert, their girls are piggy feet, and me. I can't and wouldn't let them know I'm one. It makes my thoughts real when they touch each other. They're guests at the hotel. They go in through the glassed-in terrace, slow upstairs to view the moon go down. Snarled vines in their hair, the little English devouring. 5:30, little ones, already light outside. From Spanish Harlem, sun spills through the seamless windows of my Gowa's blue bedroom where you're sleeping, what freight of dreams. Blue boat, I'll navigate, pilot this dawn. There's someone who is dying, darling, and that's always true. Though skin on skin, we would obliterate the fact mouth, mouth, lives have come to something like the equilibrium light gives, not quite tidal. And aren't we, when we are on dry land with shaky sea legs, walking hand in hand, often up, reading line on grave? You did say, need me less and I want more. I'm still shell-shocked at needing anyone. Used to being used to it my own. It won't be me out on the tiles till 4:30 while you're in bed, willing the door open. You wanted her then more. Because you need, I woke alone in what's not yet our room. Strewn though with your guitar, shoes, notebook, socks, trousers, and jammed with mine. Half the world was sleeping it off in every other bed under the roof. I wish I had a roof over my bed to pull down on my head when I feel damned wanting you so much it looks mean. Grief, and I want to take it up in you. Joy, and I want to spend it all beside you. Fear, and you are the place. Courage is what leaves me brave enough to turn you around and tell you what to do to me after. Rivers and downstream glide, we breathe together. Look, or I get scared, but you're watching while you take me to the deep part where I find you. You need to know, I do know where, know how to drive the home. Wit, you get the point and flat statement of a gift tongue. I get up and you get me down, get lost, leave me home, take me both of you. How can you love me? Things I feel that scare me, crashing a window. How can you love me? I'm such an asshole sometimes. I can't take hold of what's really there. Use it. Let you take the wheel and put the head back. Truck stop pass. Where would we go that morning? Would the grass beside the highway mount to granite? Steel and rubber take us far enough that I could pull my ghosts out of guts, cry for them with you behind me on some high stone place where water breaks from under the arteries, hard breaths sound like mine, letting them go, saying goodbye. And I'd like to close longish, not too long, I hope, poem assumptions, which started as so many do, as a kind of gift in a letter from a friend of another poet, Julia Alvarez, a wonderful book, Homecome, Grove Press. And Julia had been writing a series of sonnets in which there was one on the old François Villon theme of Where Are the Beauties of Yesteryear? And in the accompanying letter, she said, of course, I'm sorry that plain old Margaret Fuller died too. And that was the gift started this going. It's called The Ballad of Ladies Lost Sound. It's dedicated to Alvarez. Where are the women who, entre deux guerres, came out on college graduation trips, came to New York, football scholarships, came to town meeting, decorous hair? Where are the expatriate salonnières, the gym teacher, the math department head? Do nieces follow where the odd aunt led? The elephants die off in Cagnes-sur-Mer. H.D., whose nature was bisexual, and plain old Fuller died well. Where are the single combat champions? The Chevalier Deon, Pearl's Farouk, Dietrich, who ran Zora in the Duke, open-handed Winifred Elliman, Colette, who hedged bets, always won. Sojourners sojourned where she need not, pack decades of white girl conscience on her back. The spirits gave up Zora. She lay down under a weed field, Miles Eatonville, and Twain and Mark Fuller died as well. Where's Stevie with her pleated schoolgirl dresses and Rosa with her permit pants? Who snuck Clara's mestiza flamboyant and bled Frida onto her canvases? Where are the Nicarati hostesses, the coal-eyed ivory poets with severe chignons, the rebels who grew out their hair, the bulldog of Marcel's prophet, conglomerate who opted Sugar Hill and plain old Fuller died? Anne Hutchinson called witch, termagant, whore, fell to the long knives having tripped a noose. Carolina Maria de Jesus' tale from the slag heaps of the landless poor ended straw mat, the dirt floor. In action, 13 years after 15 in prison, Eleanor of Aquitaine accomplished half of Europe and fourscore anniversaries for good or ill, and plain Margaret Fuller died well. Has Ida B. persuaded Susan B. to pool resources for a joint campaign? Two Harriets act pageant by Lorraine, cheered by the butch drunk on the IRT who used to watch me, watching. We've note Angelina Grimke Wells for choral settings drawn from the compiled poems of Angelina Wells Grimke. There's no such tense past conditional, and plain old Marcella died as well. Who was Sappho's protege, and when did we lose Roxbeth, the dramaturg nun? What did bibulous Suzanne Valadon think about Artemisia, tended to make a life-size murder look blended? Where's Afra, fond of dalliance pun? Where's Jane, who didn't indulge in either one? Whoever knows Enda, Pintrick ended, is not teaching art history, Yale, and plain old Margaret Fuller died as well. Is Berulia upstairs behind the curtain debating Juana Inez Cruz? Where's Savant Annabella, Augusta Goose, Fanny, Maud, Lydian, Frida, Kathleen, without whom this never written? Luisa, who wrote, saved, sewed, and nursed? Malinche, who's like all translator cursed? Bessie, whose voice was hemp and steel and satin outside a segregated hospital, and plain old Fuller as well? Where's Amy, who kept Ada in cigars and love, requited both country and courtly, although quinquagenarian and portly? Where's Emma upstairs? Where's Billy, whose strange fruit ripened in bars? Where's the street-scavenging little pharaoh? Too poor, too mean, too weird, too wide, too narrow. Marie Curie, examining her scars, was not particularly beautiful. Fuller died. Who was the grandmother Frankenstein? The vindicatrix writes woman. Madame de Sévigné said prayers summon the postman just as eloquent as mine, though my Madame de Grignan's nine. But Mary Wollstonecraft had never known that, nor did Paula Modison. The three-day infant blinked the sunshine, the mothers in their faces wall, and plain old Fuller as well. Tomorrow night, the harvest moon will wane, its floodlight a silhouetted wood. Make your own footnote, who do you, emerita. She wasn't very old, or really my age, exact, volume incomplete. The life, will it never be sweet? She wrote it once. I quote it once again. Midlife, midnight, moonish, and I can almost hear the warning bell. Shore, sounding starlight, stain on waves, heaved over what she began and truncated as chronicle. And plain old Margaret Fuller died as well. Thank you very much.